This is a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network, WDPN, bringing you the very best in internet talk radio.
Hey, all you pet stylists, you found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers! And hi, Susie!
Hi, groomers! Hi, Barbara, and welcome to episode 22 of The Groom Pod. So this week on The Groom Pod, we're going to discuss what's new this week, which we do every week. We're going to talk about brushes. We're going to talk about toxic chemicals. And we're going to have an interview with Dave Campanella. And I'd invite you guys to be part of the discussion group. You can find us at facebook.com/group/thegroompod. You can download the podcast on Stitcher and on iTunes. And you can also find the show notes and anything else pertinent at www.thegroompod.com. What's new this week? Brought to you by Barbara's Shopping Site. Shop for specialty grooming items at www.shop.bbird.biz. Shop with a groomer. It's good karma. Well, what's new this week, Barbara?
Oh, well, we had a really good week this week. Kind of uneventful. Well, I'll tell you the truth. I didn't feel very good this week, and my joints are bothering. My knees are bothering me bad. I sort of stumbled around, but I managed to get through my 3 days of grooming and do a pretty good job and take a couple of pictures and have a few good laughs. You know, a good day for me is one where you do get it all done without a meltdown and you have some good laughs.
I like that philosophy.
And we do that.
I had a fascinating week, and it was an absolutely revolutionary week to my grooming.
Revolutionary.
And none of that revolution happened in the grooming shop or in my grooming trailer or even at a client's house. Can you believe that?
No, what happened? Tell me.
I suspect this is going to really make a difference. Apparently, I can't see. God. So I went to the eye doctor
and yes.
Yeah. And for years, my husband's been telling me, don't wear too strong of glasses because it'll ruin your eyes, because I don't know where he heard that. And normally I don't listen to him, but for some reason I grasped onto this one, and I have been very slow to upgrade the amount of my cheaters, right?
The readers, right?
Yes. Yeah, and I buy dollar store readers at that because, you know, they're a dollar. So I've been using like 225 readers and nothing for distance. And I go into the eye doctor and she said, well, it's been a long time since you've been in. And I went, oh, really? When? And she goes, 2006. And I went, oh, and I didn't think anything was wrong because I can make my eyes work. I can even make my eyes work without my glasses. Like I can read, you know, a few words at normal length if I really try hard to focus my eyes. Apparently that's not good for you. So I should be wearing 375
and I've been
wearing 225s. And so what do you think that's going to do to my scissoring?
You just might get real good.
Because prior to that, I really didn't have the skill to really perfect my scissoring. But over the past few years, I've really gotten good at that portion. And I couldn't figure out why it's taken me so long to finish scissor the dogs or to get them to look where they're adequate. Well, I can't see.
So you're struggling. Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
I hear you.
So I went ahead and made the jump to progressive lenses. So they've got the three different focal points since I'm driving and I need to see far. Turns out I should have.
So these are prescription glasses now? Good.
No?
Girl.
No, I only went a few days ago, so they're making them.
But they are making them. But you did allow them to.
Oh, yeah. I bought 3 pairs.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Well, my faith is restored. Okay.
Yes.
Well, you know, I had a health-oriented revelation this week, too, that now that you mention it. And that was I realized again that I'm not drinking enough water. And I realized again that when I don't drink plenty of water, that I feel lousy. So yep. It's not that I get sick or anything like that. I just feel crappy. And here it is, you know, it's starting to warm up a little bit. Although we've had a very cool spring in Tucson. It was in the 70s this week, unhistorically cool.
And we were in the 70s and it was historically warm. Go figure.
Needing to hydrate is not necessarily a heat-related thing, although if you're perspiring, you need more. But I just realized that I underhydrate. I just don't drink enough water, and it's probably related to that I don't like to have to pee all the time.
Yeah, I'm
you know, in one end, out the other, and I just don't have time for that. And that is, like, the worst excuse. If there was one thing you could do that would improve your physical well-being, would you not do it because you don't want to go to the bathroom? Come on.
So now that I'm hearing you say it, it kind of sounds silly, but I subscribe to that. Absolutely.
I'm sure that all the more so in a mobile situation, because you not only don't have time for that, you don't have a place for that.
I was in Japan. I was sailing in a sailboat regatta, and I was sailing on a boat that had no head, no bathroom, with 3 old dudes who were they weren't old, but they were like in their 60s, you know? And the first day I went out there, and we were out there for like 8 or 9 hours, and I swear I thought I was going to explode. I couldn't even talk to anybody by the time we were headed back to the dock because I had to pee so bad. And it was rough, and there was no way that I was going to try to pee in a bucket. So the whole week, rest of the week during the races, I just didn't drink anything in the morning. I didn't drink anything, which is horrible. It's just horrible. But I managed to make those 8-9 hour days without ever having to use the bathroom. It was like 5 days of living bathroom hell. But yeah, I know the feeling.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm on board. And you know, there's a new Facebook group. Oh, and darn, I'm not sure I have the name right. It's all about me, or it's about me.
Okay.
And it's groomers discussing well-being matters. It's groomers, but not talking about the actual grooming. We're talking about surviving our work. And
a support group.
Yeah, it's a support group. And I'll get more information. It's a health and well-being support group for groomers. And it's not a weight reduction. It's not that kind of stuff. It's just stuff like what I just said, you know, being aware of the importance of keeping hydrated on the job.
Yeah, that sounds neat. We should get that information. I'll stick that up on the show page. Yeah, I'll also stick last week's article up on the show page, but I've been so busy, I haven't gotten a chance to get to it.
Okay.
So one other thing happened to me during the week that's worth note, and it's a little bit of adventures in mobile grooming. And I have a client who is an elderly Japanese woman who has a daughter who flies for American Airlines. So the lady and her husband moved to Japan about 10 or 12 years ago, and I started grooming their tiny little poodle in their Miami, which for me was challenging at best. But I loved this dog, and they let me color him. And he would come every Friday, and he would stay all day with me and follow me around the vet hospital, and I just loved him dearly. And then they had a cat they'd bring in once a month, and I'd give the cat a bath. Well, about, I don't know, 6 or 8 weeks after they had, or 6 or 8 months after they had moved here from Japan to be closer to their daughter who lived in the United States, the husband committed suicide. Now, this is a old school, old fashioned, traditional Japanese family. And now mom is alone and the daughter is flying back and forth to Japan for American Airlines. So the only person that she ever really bonded with was me, because I loved her dog. And I mean, I loved Bo. Bo was that they brought Bo from Japan, and he was just full of character, and he was the neatest little silver poodle. Tiny, like the size of my foot. And he was just a cool guy. Anyway, so there was Mrs. Watanabe stuck in the house without anybody to support her. And I just became their emergency phone call. So flash forward to now, no more dogs, but they do have, they have gone through a few cats, and they used to have me come bathe the cat once a month or once a week, until I finally convinced him that their short-haired tabby really didn't need to be bathed once a week. But I think it was more that somebody was checking on Mrs. Watanabe. And but I did finally talk him into a once a month bath, because that cat finally passed away, and their new cat, not so cooperative in the bath. So for everyone's benefit, including Mrs. Watanabe, because I can't get him dry enough, and me, because he's just a terror, I only do him once a month. But I was working the other day, and I got a phone call from Mrs. Watanabe. And he is a Crystal's cat, you know, a urinary Crystal's cat.
Yeah.
And I get a panicked call from Mrs. Watanabe that Carrot is acting strange. And in her broken English, I can't quite discern what exactly is the problem. So I finish the grooming, call my vet, the vet that I used to work for, who is her vet. And I explain that Mrs. Watanabe called and I'm not sure what's going on, but I suspect the cat is blocked. And is it okay if I just grab him and bring him right in and have you guys take him in the back? And Doug says, oh, absolutely, of course. So I get over there. And Carrot must have had a flea, because he was absolutely going, he's an indoor only cat. He was absolutely going crazy at the back of his ear, and he'd take two steps and then he'd go at the back of his ear and then he'd twist over to the other side and he'd try to lick and there was hair everywhere. And she happily showed me that he had used the litter box, but she was so confused. But I was so grateful to get there and find that the cat wasn't blocked. So I went up to the pet store. I got some Advantage. I went back and I applied the Advantage, and I found out that Yuka was coming home in a day. So I checked on her the next morning, and the cat's behavior completely went back to normal. But that's a little bit of adventures in mobile.
You're so special, Susie. I hope you realize that these connections that you have long term with your clients is beyond. I mean, we all have some of that, but you are the heads above. You are the goes the extra mile groomer. I really honor you for that.
I have the mother load of fantastic people in my world. You know, I handpick them. They're all with me for a reason, and I did a lot of damage when I was younger, and I have a lot to give back for. So this is the way I make up for what a piece of poo I was as a young adult. And it makes me feel better, and I know it makes them feel better. So I was really happy to be there for Carrot and Mrs. Watanabe and Yuka.
And you were, and I think it's a wonderful story. Thanks for sharing it.
You betcha.
Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment.
All right, well, let's head over to our first appointment, which is all about brushes.
Oh, boy.
I know. The reason I come up on this is because at the Northwest Grooming Show, I got a Chris Christensen, one of his little sample packs that had a tearless shampoo and an air freshener.
Miracle Air.
And also a wooden pin brush. And I had never really seen a wooden pin brush, so it got me thinking, I wonder what a wooden pin brush is for. I opted to do the brush segment that we're going to do now. So there's lots of reasons to encourage brushing amongst your clients, and helping them pick the right tool is always important, and also for what we use in our professional life. So brushing actually moves oils through the hair that protect the hair, doesn't it?
Yes, and it also helps to remove toxins.
Interesting subject, toxins. So it's important that we choose the right tool so that we encourage healthy hair growth, protected and not damaged hair, and good healthy skin. So let's start out with the workhorse of our industry, of course, and that is the slicker brush. Do you use a slicker brush?
I have a number of slicker brushes that I use, but not as much as I used to use them before I studied coat damage and hair damage, because I appreciate that slicker brushes, especially the cheaper ones that don't have polished tips on the tines, that's what the needles on the brush are called, tines, T-I-N-E-S. Ones that don't have polished tines, they can really rough up the hair cuticle and lead to hair breakage, hair loss, and tangles. I don't use my slicker brushes as much as I used to, but I still have a number of them at my table and use them for the last little bit of fluff drying to stretch fluffy coats that I'm scissoring. And yesterday I used Chris Christensen, their new slicker, which is a big slicker that has long bent tines on it. There's a Tough on Tangles is another name of a slicker that's out there you can get from Ryan's Pet that has extra long tines. And that kind of a brush is pretty good for when there's undercoat that's coming out in teeny, teeny tufts that's right, causing matting. And you know, like everything else, including a regular size comb, miss those little micro tufts. But a slicker brush will get those. And this long-tined slicker brush, it was on my full-coated Wheaton Terrier. So he's a baby. He's, you know, he's touchy and sensitive. And he had micro tufts in his hair that we had to get out in order to do a thorough comb out. And that slicker brush got them out. But for a lot of my regular brush out and for my first going through the coat, I prefer a pin brush. And one of my favorites is the Chris Christensen 16 millimeter T brush, which is on a handle that's like a slicker. But
yeah, I use that a lot. And part of the reason his brushes are so good is because of what you said about being ground and polished. And they right, seem to hold up really well. So I was looking at his, because I looked at a bunch of different brushes to kind of research for the segment. And I was mostly drawn back to him because he seems to have quite an array and done a lot of research on the end product. And his products, I feel, are pretty good. Plus, they're accessible to me. So I know more about them.
Yeah, the Chris Christensen brushes are a little bit more expensive. And part of that reason is that his manufacturing is in Germany. And so there's another way that brushes can differ. And that's how they're attached at the base.
Yeah, the cushion.
The cushion and how they're either sewn in or glued in. Cheap brushes are just, they're made totally by machine. The machine forces clusters of tines through the rubber, and then they're just glued on the back. And then that's just glued onto the base of the brush, the plastic or sometimes wood.
An example of that brush is the Universal Slicker, and that was my very first slicker, notorious for brush burning people, dogs, you know.
Dogs.
Yes.
Yeah, slicker brushes, that's another thing, is that those unpolished, tiny tines of a slicker brush, and on a curved slicker like the Universal Slicker, which is just a favorite among a lot of groomers, in the wrong hands, like an owner that doesn't know about pressure, a little bit too much pressure can actually abrade the skin of the dog.
Really quickly, too. Really
quickly. And if you ever do that, a little Gold Bond powder goes a long ways to immediately resolving that.
Oh, yeah, Gold Bond. So you mentioned the curved back. So that's one of the variations of slickers. They also have flexible head slickers, like the LaPooch slickers or the ones that the Groomer's Helper guy is coming out with. There's also a Pet Edge. How do you feel about those?
I like those kind of brushes. I have the small flexible head brush, the Mars Flexi King. I sell that in the shop, in the Birdie shopping cart, and it's a really good little slicker brush for small areas like behind the ear mats, around the elbow mats. You know, if it gets too matted in the armpit, I usually shave that area, unless it's a, like a competition or certification dog. The Flexi King brush, and it's only about an inch and a half wide at the most. So it's a small area brush, and it has a very flexible head. So it's going to kind of bounce off of the skin rather than press into the skin. It's also good in the flank area for getting those little flank mats out. But
what
it's
is
not
that
a
brush run?
About $26.
And you can get it at shop.bieber.biz.
Yeah, really good little thing to have. I wouldn't want to use it as an overall slicker brush, but oh, like toe mats, that's another little area that it will help pull those apart.
It has an interesting head. The back of the head is interesting.
Well, it has a stop. People think that that back is where you put your thumb, but no, don't do that. But it has a like a break. It has a stop, a built-up metal piece that keeps the head from flexing back too far and then and breaking the handle.
Yeah, I always wondered about that. Good that you explained it. All right, so you've got the flexible head brushes. That's the most often brush that I grab for is that double back greenish yellowish single size Le Pooch brush. The opposite side of some of those Le Pooch brushes just has the slicker pins with no bend in them.
Great.
Thank you.
That's just for fluff finishing. That side, Susie, is just for fluff finishing. A lot of people, they don't know what that side is used for. When you don't have any resistance in the coat, but you want to do the least assault to the hair coat as possible. And the curved pin is more aggressive than the straight pin. So the straight side is for when you're already combed up, but you want to just get that stretching action for some fluff drying.
I do love those brushes. They're really handy for breaking up mats, mostly. That's mostly what I use them for.
They were revolutionary in their time. You know, again, they were German made. They are German made. They're polished tips on the tines. Yeah, the cheap knockoffs like that you get at Pet Edge that look like a Le Pooch brush, they ain't the same, folks. They will do some damage to your coat. And when you damage the coat with a slicker brush, it is not ever visible to the eye. This is invisible damage, and it tends to accumulate over time. And you hardly realize it, except that maybe the coat is getting, the more you brush it, the more it gets matted, you know.
All of a sudden, you know, that where the owner wasn't having problems, all of a sudden the in-between the grooming gets worse and worse. And then there comes a point where I say, okay, time to shave it off. And then we shave it off and we start again new. Because you can't really ever repair that, right?
No, you can't. You can temporarily fill in gouges and crevices and cracks in the hair cuticle. But that's with conditioners, and it's going to wear off in a matter of days.
And then the hair tangles back up.
So, and sometimes what happens is that at the grooming salon, we get educated and we use more expensive, more hair-friendly tools, but the owners use cheap crap at home, and they brush away and brush away, and they do it on dry, dirty hair. That's another thing. If you're brushing on dry hair, you're stirring up a lot of static electricity, which makes hair cling together, which can actually make for more tangling. You're using dirty hair as like sandpaper.
Pin brushes then. So pin brushes come in many shapes and sizes. Their handles are different. The shape of the head is different. The length of the pins can vary. The most important thing, again, to remember with getting a pin brush is that it should have polished and ground pins. We go once again back to Chris Christensen, who has a wide variety of pin brushes, including
the 16 millimeter. Yeah, see, the 16 millimeter T-brush has long pins that are widely spaced in a very extra firm pad. So it's good for thick coats. It's a great brush for doodles. And I sell a lot of that brush to doodle owners, I have the 16 millimeter T-brush and the wide tooth poodle comb on a wooden handle. And I sell those two as a golden doodles or labradoodles. I probably sell a pair a week at least. And it's word of mouth. It's because it works. They're telling each other.
I love that little tea brush. I like the style of the rake type handle. I think that's much more for my crappy hands. I like that style of a handle.
Well, it's good for some things. When you're working with an actual long drop coat that you want to stretch, you want to be able to get a certain wrist action, and I can't demonstrate it on the radio, but you want to be able to rotate your wrist as you come out to the ends of the hair so that you're stretching that hair enough to get it nice and straight. There's just a little technique, and if you watch hairdressers brush, you'll see how they move their wrist when they get towards the end. Of course, hairbrushes have a whole brush styling stuff that they do as they dry the coat to curl the ends under and that kind of stuff. But just from my point of view, the T-brush doesn't quite get that last action. So it's good for brushing out. And it's great for curly and thick coats and wonderful for double-coated breeds. But for long drop coats, like the Yorkies or I have a couple of Havanese that I do in full coats. On those coats, I like the brass pins, the Chris Christensen brass pin. He might call it gold. That brush creates no static electricity, and it's really good for fine, long drop coats. I sure do use them, and I have one at every station.
Do you have a variety of lengths? I know the T-brush has the short length pins. Do you have a longer length pin for your finishing brush?
It is a little bit, I think it's more like a 20 millimeter. I also have a super long T-brush, but I rarely use it. Maybe on the bearded collie, the full-coated bearded collie that we do.
So tell me about the wooden pin brush. I was reading about the point of that being that it's more gentle for detangling. What do you know about that?
I love the wooden pin brush. I use one on my borzoi a lot, and it is amazingly good for breaking apart tangles. You wouldn't think that it could, but it can. And it's very dog friendly, and it's very hair friendly. It doesn't mean that it's one brush does it all brush, but I really like it. And I like it on dogs that have not too fine a coat. And there again, it would probably be a good brush on our bearded collie. I have a hard time getting my bather really savvy about using different brushes. I can get her to use a pin brush and not a slicker for some things. But, you know, there is just a brush bather. I think it's in their genes where they pick up that slicker brush.
I'm trying to break that habit. Over the last two years, I've broken the habit.
I know. You just reach for that. And then you want to keep it. But you see, I use a number of brushes on a given dog. I will start with a wider tined brush, and I'll work up to maybe that last little bit of stuff with a slicker.
So I'm excited to use that wooden brush. I put it in my grooming trailer immediately, and out of that little package of stuff I got, that's the most valuable. That's the thing I've had the most fun with. The tearless shampoo, that's all right. I wasn't in love with it.
Oh, and the wooden pin brush, that's what I use for myself.
Ah!
I have one in my purse. I have one in my bathroom. And if I grab a brush out of my basket at work to use on my own hair, it's going to be the wooden pin brush.
And I have an oval head, extra super duper fancy wood brush that Chris sent me once. And that's what I use on my head. I love that. I don't know. It's some magical wood, and it's just the coolest looking brush, and it feels so great. And that's the one.
Is it that black wood?
Yep.
That's a great wood. It's so exotic.
Another thing that the wooden brush doesn't do is it doesn't promote static. So that's kind of handy. I don't know how long it's going to last. Is it a long lasting brush?
Well, you have to be careful with it because it will lose pins, but you can replace single pins on that brush.
Interesting.
You have to buy them. They cost a couple of bucks.
Do you have any bristle brushes?
I have a bristle brush. It's a boar bristle brush. Boar bristle is highly touted because it is hair friendly. Plastic bristles can actually be almost as rough on hair cuticle as a slicker brush. But boar bristle brushes are touted as being hair friendly. And the one that I have has a kind of stiff side and a soft side. Yeah, and I use that when I dry clean. Remember I've talked about using dry cleaning hair products, the dry shampoo that you spray on the coat and then you brush it through. I use my boar bristle brush for that. I use it for the soft side for polishing short coats. I'll grab the boar bristle brush and use the soft side. Or I have these mitts. Those are old. I have some of these old school tools that I swear by. And my mitts are in there. I have one that's a sisal mitt. And then I have another that's a boar bristle mitt. And those are great for polishing short coated dogs without having to use any extra products, but it looks like you put something glowy on it. You know, it just shines them up so nice. It removes dandruff. If you have a dog that comes out dandruffy,
right,
you can use the soft boar bristle.
Good point. You want to know what I learned about boar bristles?
What's that, Suze? I'm sure you have a note there. Tell me all about it.
So, the average boar hair is 6 inches long.
Parts of the boar hair are used at different qualities of the brush. You forget that I worked for Chris Christensen for a year.
So it looks like they get 3 or 4 different cuts from one actual hair. The first cut is the one at the bulb end or the root end. And the flag end or the very tip, they just throw that away. That's garbage. So that was interesting. One of the things I read is that the bristles should be long enough to reach the skin through the coat. So you don't want to use too short a bristle. That's why there's the both ends, I imagine, on that brush. So they have the short side on one side for the terrier type coats and then the longer bristles for the longer coats. And it says they're good for getting a straight, flat finish.
Yes, I do that. I use them on my terrier jackets when I'm hand stripping. And the thing about hand stripping is that you don't always take all of the hair off of the jacket. You just take about a third of it out, the longest side. And then if you fluff dry that, poof, you've got this ugly puffy mess, and it might even be uneven. And here you thought you had this nice tight jacket, and all of a sudden it's not so much. So I use that boar bristle to lay that hair back down as I dry it instead of anything else, or I might dampen it and use the boar bristle brush to straighten that hair out again, flatten it.
All right. Well, I don't have one of those in the trailer, so maybe I should throw... I do have it in the house, though, so maybe I should take that and put that out there, too. So let's talk just a little bit to wrap it up about brush care. So after you're done brushing through a dog, do you pull all the hair out?
Well, if there's hair in there, I do, and I have a tool that's a brush cleaning tool. It looks like super long slicker brush tines on a handle, and it kind of combs through the brush and removes all the hair. Brush care is very important because if you let a lot of those oils, you're removing oils that you're moving through the hair, and if you let that build up on the pads, it's going to deteriorate the rubber or the pad material. So you want to clean your brushes every now and then. You want to get rid of hair, and you want to wash and dry them very well. Oh, here's something I want to tell you about brushes. This was kind of funny because many good quality pin brushes, such as the Chris Christensen brushes, have a hole on the pad, like one missing pin.
I've seen that.
What is that? That's an air hole.
Oh.
That's an air hole so that air can escape from under the pad.
And that makes sense.
And Lisa Christensen get flustered because she would get these people wanting to return their brand new brush because it was missing a pin and there's a hole in the pad. What's up with that? You know, and she says, I have a one word response. She says, I just hit reply and I write air hole.
I love it. So they also have a little, I don't know, a hand size small brush for cleaning your brush. I bought one of those.
Right,
brush.
Right. I have one of those. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you use
brush
to clean
brush.
Your brush? Yeah. Do you
well,
use soap and water, a little shampoo? Do you use a spray-on bleach? Or what do you use?
It depends on the brush. And you don't want to use a lot of harsh detergents on your brushes. But I've used... the Chris Christensen foaming cleaner, what is it called? OC cleaner or something like that. I've used a foaming face wash is a good one to use on your brushes.
I've got that.
Yeah, you can use that and work it through. And you can choose to rinse or not. You know, you just really want to make sure that you get them dry and that you don't let your brushes get that you don't wash them and let them get moldy in a humid environment. So you might want to actually force dry. But a little soap and water of the milder form is a good idea to do on your brushes. And you know what? I don't do it real often, but I do it. And I definitely wash my brushes after I've groomed a dog that has any kind of a skin thing business going on. Like, let's watch that brush. And I don't need to freak out and put a lot of chemical disinfectant on it, but I do need to give it a good soap and water.
Well, I learned the hard way that not using a Chris Christensen brush is equally as bad as overusing a Chris Christensen brush, because I had so carefully tucked away one of my magic brushes from him. And it turns out that the oil that you get from brushing your hair actually keeps that cushion pliable. And so I blew out one of the cushions on one of my very fancy brushes.
From not using it.
Yep, from not using it. And it was, yeah. I think it was one of those tea brushes, which is okay because I replaced it recently from you. So, all right, I think that pretty much covers brushes. And I have some exciting news, Barbara.
Oh, yeah.
We have earned our first check from Amazon.
Ha! Woo-hoo!
And it's because of all of our listeners showing their love by shopping through the Amazon banner on our website. And it's enough to buy one of our microphones.
Still. Wow, that's a payoff. Boy, it's probably I do a lot of shopping on that. I feel good.
You probably just bought your own microphone.
yeah.
But good. I want to thank everybody who is using the banner, because it does help. There's a, you know, there's the cost of the bandwidth and there's the cost of the equipment and there's certainly the cost of the website. And I think
and plus, hello, we deserve to get paid.
Well, there's that too. I do spend a fair amount of time working on the podcast, but it's a labor of love, and I'm not looking to make a bunch of money off of it, but it would be nice if it wasn't if I wasn't constantly writing checks that were not coming back. So how can you help us? Well, you can go to thegroompod.com, scroll to the bottom of the website and click on the Amazon banner and do all of your shopping. And the podcast will get a tiny, teeny little portion of your sale, and it won't cost you anything else. But gee whiz, Barbara and I really appreciate it.
The definition du jour.
Okay, it's time for the definition du jour. So, Barbara, I'm going to pass the microphone over to you.
Okay, well, thank you, Susie. You know, today, rather than talk about a specific ingredient, I just want to talk about a little bit about the concept of toxicity and what makes for a toxic ingredient, because this term toxic is just tossed at us like hand grenades to chase us away from products by bloggers and internet know-it-alls.
And even advertisers.
And so what is, looking at the term toxic chemical, we need to look at both what is a chemical and what is toxic. Because another thing that I've run into lately is not only are we free of this and free of that, but I'm running into products that are advertised to be chemical free.
Yeah, how is that even possible?
How is that even possible? So I think that it's possible. You know, a chemical technically is a material produced by or used in a reaction involving changes in atoms or molecules. So it's when you change a substance from one thing to another using another substance. And that applies to almost all the working ingredients in a shampoo.
For sure.
So surfactants are chemicals, and foaming agents are chemicals, and thickeners are often chemicals, except for maybe sodium chloride, which is a natural chemical. Certainly preservatives are chemicals. A lot of the additives are synthetically created from natural substances. So it's a, you know, this whole idea of what is chemical and what is natural is very murky. Some advertisers or, you know, like copywriters or whoever is, and sometimes that's me, you know, one of my jobs is to consult with a shampoo company about what to say text. I'll write text for your label or your website. And so sometimes it's on me of how do I describe this product. But some writers and advertisers and marketers are kind of operating on the basis of that, the assumption that we're afraid of chemicals. Well, chemistry is simply the study of life.
Yes.
And, you know, and the truth is all living things are made of chemicals, that there are natural, you know, like just because it's found in nature doesn't really make it a whole lot different than something that's man-made in the lab. And there are shampoo ingredients that can be either or. An example is sodium olefin sulfonate. It can be naturally derived from coconut oil, or it can be totally made in the lab. And a lot of these soap base from coconut are ingredients that are made with lauric acid, which is derived from coconut oil by subjecting the coconut oil to a chemical process that extracts the lauric acid. And then the lauric acid is reacted with something else to make something else, and so on and so forth. And you end up with a surfactant that has a molecule that has one end attracted to water and one end attracted to oily substances. And that is what cleans. If you're going to have a molecule like that, it has to be chemically, it has to be manipulated in some way. So
are you saying that I can't take a coconut and rub it on my dog and have it clean the dog?
That's right. And you can't take coconut milk and make it clean the dog. And coconut oil does not clean the dog, although coconut oil is not bad, but it's oil, you know, it's a fatty substance. So the idea of a chemically free shampoo is oxymoronic. I mean, it doesn't really exist. It's nonsense, people. It's just what they're trying to sell is peace of mind.
Right.
And they're assuming that the notion of chemistry and chemical and man-made is bothersome to you, the consumer, and that you're going to want something that comes more from nature. The truth is, some of the most poisonous stuff on the planet is like botulism.
Or mushrooms.
Yeah, mushrooms. Cyanide. You know, like there's a lot of really toxic stuff. Really poisonous, lethal, deadly substances that come from nature. So the notion that man-made is unsafe and nature-made is safe is totally false. In toxicology, the main premise, first premise of the study of toxic elements is the notion that the dose makes the poison. This means that a substance is toxic only if the dose and the length of exposure and the route of exposure are sufficient to cause damage. You know, so if there's not enough present to cause damage, the ingredient is not toxic. So what happens is that there may, you know, a preservative, for example, might have the ability to be toxic if it's in sufficient amount and you ingest it orally. But it's not necessarily toxic in the minuscule amount that's found in a shampoo that's put on the skin. One 1/10,000th of the toxic level is not going to make your dog sick, you sick, not even if you put that on over and over again. The dose makes the poison. And there's a whole big, huge difference between oral toxicity and dermal, through the skin, toxicity. Because dermal toxicity requires a substance to actually penetrate through all of the epidermis and the dermis into the body itself. The job of the skin and the epidermis and the dermis is to be a barrier. So if you've got a substance that might kill rats when it's force-fed to them over a period of 24 days at 1 gram per kilogram of their weight, it is not necessarily going to have any toxicity if it touches the skin and is rinsed off in 1/1,000th of that amount in a water-based product.
Right.
Does that help with some clarity? So
yeah,
just because something is a chemical does not make it toxic. What is chemical free? It's free. It's just a mental idea. There really is no shampoo that is totally free of chemicals.
So when we're reading these blogs and we're seeing this term toxic chemicals thrown around, put on your common sense glasses and use a little thought when you're reading that.
Yes, please. And just don't let them stir up your fear of shampoos to the point that you end up using untested, untried, or ineffective products. Okay?
Yes.
So what did I talk about? So I talked about what is organic. Here's another one. how in the world can you apply the term organic to a product that's made up mostly of synthesized? Maybe these surfactants had coconut oil at some point, but basically they're synthesized ingredients. What does organic mean? Does it mean that the coconuts were grown without pesticides? Do you think that the body gives a damn whether a molecule? No, it doesn't matter. Once something is sodium lauryl sulfate, it doesn't matter to the body whether that came from a coconut or came from a petri dish or came from petroleum. The body doesn't care about the origin of a molecule. It just cares about the form of the molecule in its final form. Origin means nothing.
Good to know. So we can apply that to our everyday life. Let's take a moment to hear from our podcast network, the WDPN, and all about the great shows that they provide. And then we'll be back with our At the Table segment, which will be an interview with Dave Campanella from Best Shot.
Hey, everyone. It's your good pal, Kev, from the White Dragon Podcast Network, shamelessly interrupting your enjoyment of this tremendous WDPN podcast you're listening to basically shill to you. Bear with me here, folks. This will be brief. I know what you're all thinking. You're loving the tremendous audio spectacle currently delighting your auditory senses, and you're lamenting the fact that the stars of the WDPN are only around for you 1 hour per week, right? Well, you're wrong. We've got a whole slew of shows that will delight, entertain, and captivate you all week long. And the best part is that we've got something for everyone. Are you looking for something your whole family can enjoy? Well, look no further than Two Men and the Mouse, the flagship show of WDPN focusing on the magic and wonder of Walt Disney World. Pete Mandel and myself share our love of the most magical place on Earth as we count down the latest and greatest news of the week before diving deep into a featured topic. Maybe you're a fan of geek TV and movies. You love the world established in shows such as Arrow, Gotham, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Doctor Who, and so many more. Well, for you, we've got the Geek Watchtower. I'm joined each week by a special guest host as we review the latest installments of our favorite geek-centric media. Sometimes, though, the universe of geek pop culture can be a little too all-consuming and you need to go broad. That's why we've got Bat Squad Radio, hosted by the YouTube comedy trio known as the New Jersey Bat Squad. You'll hear me as Kev L, along with Bat Dave and Spider Denny, detailing the goings-on throughout all of geekdom. Perhaps you're more of a sports entertainment fan. Well, WDPN's got that covered as well. Step inside the world of professional wrestling with Ring Ropes Radio, the all-new pro wrestling podcast of WDPN. Kevin Clark and I present to you all the viewpoints of two 10-plus years veterans of the wrestling business and supplement that with special interviews with the stars of wrestling's past, present, and future. Want more information on where you can find this plethora of internet audio entertainment? Well, head over to Facebook.com/WD Podcast Network and give us a like for all the latest news and new shows and episodes. Okay, I'm all done. I told you it would be quick. Well, this wasn't exactly quick, but whatever. Back to the show. Enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Let's see what's happening at the grooming table.
All right, Barbara. Well, once again, you don't get to hear the interview until afterwards.
Okay. Well, that means that next week I'll listen to this week's interview, because I usually don't have time to listen to our own podcast until the Sunday after they're up on the web.
Well, good to know. Then I won't ask you any telling questions. So Dave Campanella is the marketing director of Best Shot, and I know you've got a pretty good relationship with him yourself. So how long have you known him?
Oh, God, I've known Dave, we're going to have to say, at least 10 years. And we go back. He's one of the sales reps or manufacturer representatives that I've danced around with about ingredient information and ingredient lists. And, you know, and I call this fondly dancing with reps. And sometimes, you know, and some company reps dance better than others. Some are just clods and they step on you and they just invalidate you and they refuse, or they just stonewall you. Some of them can do it in a friendly, smiling basis. But Dave and I have actually had some really great conversations about products and about ingredient information and about sharing ingredient information. And I highly respect him and I enjoy dancing with him. Yeah. Even though we may not always get to a point of him agreeing that Best Shot is going to put ingredients on their label. They're not there yet. But Best Shot has really come quite a ways and they're more open about sharing information about their ingredients than are many of our leading companies. And I think David Campanella is a great asset to our industry. And I can't wait to hear your interview, Susie.
Well, I just was so honored to spend the time with him because he is very bright and he knows a lot about the industry. He knows a lot about shampoo, but he has enormous respect for you. And I love that about him. He was free to share it. And he said, yeah, you guys don't always agree, but he said, you do the homework. And he really listens to what you say because he knows you have backed it up with some really good research. And that's one of the things I also appreciate about you. So here we go. It's time for the interview with Dave Campanella, Marketing Director of Best Shot. Okay, Dave, where are you born?
Oh, wow. Okay, well, I was born in Cleveland, Ohio in 1964 on April 24th, which means today is my 51st birthday.
Happy birthday, Dave.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. So what was your childhood like?
My childhood, let's see. You know, I'm very fortunate. I could go out anytime I wanted to and find a sandlot and friends, and we did stuff and played sports and actually did things, you know, didn't play with video games.
Like outside?
Like outside, actual outside. And then creative. I was just talking to somebody. Was it you that I was saying that we would get creative and you know, we get the current issue of Mad Magazine and we would act out the scenes and record it on our 8-track or cassette player.
Did you like school?
I like art and I like all the fun things, and I didn't apply myself in school, but I always got like A's and B's. I'm one of those people who went to school and did real well but has nothing to show for it.
Yeah, I'm a little bit that way myself. I have a lot of gymnastics to show for it and not much academics, but you know, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
So how far did you go in school?
4 years of college, went to Cleveland State, marketing and communications, and that led me to a long tenure of sales, field sales, service in the vacuum cleaner industry, which is, mm-hmm. I tell folks, is kind of the opposite end of the blow dryer industry.
Very true, very true.
Yeah.
So, being from Ohio, are you an amusement park guy?
Not so much. But we were spoiled back then because we had Geauga Lake and Cedar Point, Kings Island, and SeaWorld. There was actually a SeaWorld in Ohio. It was beautiful, and all those are gone.
Cedar Point's still there.
Yeah, Cedar Point's still there, and so is Kings Island. But Geauga Lake and SeaWorld.
Ah, that's sad.
It is.
All right, so how'd you get into grooming?
Well, you know, I married a groomer.
I suspected as much.
Yeah, and we had, my wife has had a long career in the pet industry from managing animal husbandry and managing several stores for a chain years ago. She started grooming on her own back in the day, in her late teens, early 20s, taking care of all those puppies back when it was open. And you know, you had to clean them up and keep them nice, and that's how she got into the industry. And then she worked at a veterinarian hospital as an animal tech and started doing grooming on the side. And 3 years into our marriage, I looked at how much business she was doing out of the home, and I said, you know, honey, I can't hide this anymore. We have to go legitimate, otherwise we're going to get in trouble. And we co-owned and operated a grooming salon together, and also ran a self-serve pet wash. And I actually had built back then 3 coin-operated pet washes.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was fun.
So you helped out in the shop. Were you a groomer?
I was the bather brusher.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, so I've washed thousands of dog butts, done a lot of things, and I'm going to jump ahead. I kind of know where this might lead. My wife knew the founder of Best Shot Pet Products in Akron, Ohio.
That was where I was going.
Mm-hmm. And Bill Marshall was the founder. Barbara Bird actually knew Bill way back in the day. And Bill was so busy out on the road, his two dogs were matted messes. Ironically, he sold products for matted dogs, but his dogs needed help, and my wife would groom them. And kind of had an opportunity to meet him. And when Bill got to retiring age, he'd approach me, but that wasn't in my cards to buy a business. But I got to know the new owner, Mike Gallagher, and started doing some consulting for him and working some shows. And one thing led to another, and 12 years later, I'm still with Best Shot.
So did you have any marketing background?
Oh yeah, that's my background. Field sales, regional sales, and then from there I went into working for direct response advertising, direct mail, all sorts of different things, some experience in the newspaper business, both online and all sorts of different media. One thing led to another, and found myself out of work, and because I was consulting with Best Shot, I was doing that on the side. And after about 9 months of job searching and looking around, I said to myself, why am I killing myself? I'm loving what I'm doing here. And just took a dive into it and haven't looked back. And it's been a great experience and a lot of fun. And I owe it all to my wife because I married a groomer.
So what's your favorite part about working at Best Shot?
Well, what's nice about what we do is we've always, I think, had a good grasp on our market, which is the grooming industry by large. We do a little bit with retail and a lot of private label for different folks. There's always been a great attention to the groomers. And in order to do that, you really have to understand the process and what it is you do. And you have to mindfully formulate and develop products for the various tasks. There's a lot of crazy marketing and a lot of fun things, and everybody does it to a point, and there's a fine line of going too far in your claims,
yeah.
versus being productive. And what I love most about what we're doing is we're marketing products that I believe really do make a difference. And we've been doing more education, not selling Best Shot, but actually doing legitimate seminars, talking about knowledge, and what goes into the products and the physiology, because it's something that I don't believe in the industry that has been addressed.
You're right, we're hungry for that as well.
Yeah, I mean, so much of the emphasis is on putting a need in a bottle and selling it for whatever, and there's less talk about understanding the whys and how-tos. You have the greatest product, but if you don't know how to use it, and part of, so the big emphasis that I've been doing in the seminars is focusing on an understanding of the physiology, some basic understanding of the liquids, but there's methods that are proven, that are tested, and it seems to be being received very well from the groomers because it's very truthful and straightforward, a mindful grooming approach.
One of the great things about having you at the trade show is we actually get to send feedback right back to the factory. And that is something that we've always had with you guys, and we really do, as groomers, appreciate that back and forth that we have. So what's coming up for Best Shot?
Coming up as far as new products, ideas.
Yeah.
I can do a couple spoiler alerts on some things. We've been doing real well over the last 2 years with a line of deodorizing products. And not just for skunk, but products that not only will deodorize skunk, but many other things. And there's some new technologies out there that are finding their way into the grooming industry. And we have a nice shampoo and a nice spray, but we're introducing a deodorizing conditioner because what we're finding is one of the number one complaints by most people who have stinky dogs, skunk dogs, dogs with smelly thyroid issues, yeast infections, whatever, that after they get them clean, there's that lingering smell. And the only way to tackle that is to approach the skin. And it's kind of neat. So we're kind of coming up with just as we have a three-step for dematting and detangling, we're working on a three-step for total odor annihilation.
Excellent. I look forward to seeing what that's all about.
So one of the things we're doing with everybody I interview is a little fun questionnaire that we call the Puppy Cuts Pop Quiz. So are you ready for that?
Oh boy, is this okay, this will be interesting.
You know, it's our version of boxers or briefs.
Okay.
Okay, so first question, what's your favorite TV show?
Ancient Aliens.
Okay, no judging there. Favorite movie?
Swing Blade.
I love Swing Blade. Favorite pizza topping?
I'm going to say banana peppers.
Banana peppers. Ah, that's an unusual one. Okay, near and dear to my heart, Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Coke! Oh, my God. Well, you are from back east, sort of. Okay, if you were an animal, what animal would you be?
I was going to say a bird, but that's technically not an animal.
No, you can do bird.
Can I?
Yeah.
Let's say an eagle.
Okay, an eagle. Good choice. What's your favorite vacation?
Favorite vacation would be getting lost on a beach in the St. Thomas.
Have you done it?
Yeah.
Nice.
I want to go back.
Me too. I love St. Thomas. Okay, first job.
What was it? Paper? Well, if we really want to go back, I deliver papers.
Yeah, that's oftentimes the first job, yeah. So I'll go with that. What is your hidden talent?
I used to play guitar in a band.
Okay, we'll call that a hidden
talent.
We'll call it hidden talent. And the last question, what's your bad habit?
Bad habit? I can talk. I'm kind of...
Well, cool. All right, well, thank you for taking a few minutes
sure.
to talk with me, Dave.
Absolutely.
And we will look forward to what's coming new in Best Shot. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. Thanks, Susie.
All right.
All right, well, I know you didn't hear that interview yet, but it was really great.
Good.
So as always, it's been great spending the hour with you, Barbara, and that'll wrap it up for this week on the Groom Pod. Anything you'd like to add?
No, I just hope everybody has a safe and happy week of grooming.
All right. Well, have a fantastic week, groomers, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye, Barbara. Bye, groomers.
Bye, groomers. Bye, Susie.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.